Ephesians chapter 4, verse 11, we find an office there given by Paul as an evangelist. He says God has given some to be some apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers. And so there's these offices, and really I believe there's four offices there combining pastor and teacher into one. Evangelist is really a very important office, but hard to define sometimes. What is an evangelist? Well, I believe that Philip gives us a good model for it, figuring he's the only one in the book of Acts called an evangelist. So as we look at Philip's life, as we look at his ministry, we also want to keep in the back of our minds, this guy is the only model we have of what the office of an evangelist is. And if I was to bring a translation to that or interpretation on that today, it really would fit the best in our modern day church as a missionary. What is a missionary? You don't really see missionaries in the early church. It's not like that's a pastor and that's a missionary. But you would see that's a pastor and that's an evangelist. And so though we use the word missionary because that's what we're used to, really probably better would be the office there of an evangelist, part of the leadership of the church, one sent out, having that ability. But what is their work? Their work is planting churches. Their work is reaching the unreached, really, in the book of Acts. So, it's obvious there's a lot more unreached in Acts than there is today, in the sense of there's a lot more reach today than there was in the time of the early parts of Acts, though there's plenty of unreached. I don't want you to mistake that. and we need to reach them. But Philip is a great model. Now, here's the neat thing about Philip. What we see here is we're going to pick it up in verse 26. We're going to see that Philip is a man of availability. And availability is key. Availability is that which you and I ought to be in. What is availability? Availability is I'm available, Lord, for you. For whatever you would will. I'm not my own. I've been bought with a price. I'm not leading my life. You're leading my life. The word Lord makes it real clear. You're the Lord and I'm the servant. The word in the Greek is slave. Do you see your place today as slave and as Christ the Master? They were called bond slaves of Jesus Christ. Simply, it wasn't a bad thing. It wasn't a negative thing. It was a thing of availability. They're saying, we are His. He's died for us. He bought us. And we are His. He does with us as He wills. I don't know if you've come to the place of surrender where you see yourself as really a chess piece on a chessboard in God's hand. Moves you where He wills. Now, I'm not saying that that's how it is. I'm saying you've got to put yourself in that place. You see, brothers and sisters, that's where I want to be. I want to be a chess piece in the hand of the Master. The Apostle Paul says to Timothy, in 2 Timothy 2, verse 21, he says that we are vessels chosen by God, vessels, he says, that we want to be vessels that are useful for the Master, prepared for every good work. Now, you've heard that verse many times if you've been listening, because I quote it like once a week at least. Because it just really sums up the life of a Christian, that what we ought to be as Christians, surrendered. We use the word availability, and just talking about a surrendered individual to the Lord, and they're available for God. Whatever God has, they don't have an agenda. They have surrendered their will to the Lord. Their desires. They've laid them at the foot of the cross. God is God and I am His servant and I love it. It's not a forced thing. It's not that I'm, you know, this chess piece that God moves where I don't want to go. It's sweet surrender. It's, Lord, I simply want to be where You are. Now, many of us have said it in different ways. We have said this, I just want to know the will of the Lord. And now, why do you want to know the will of the Lord? So you can do the will of the Lord, right? I hope so. Hope you just don't want to know it. Say, yeah, I know it now, and I'll do what I want. But Lord, I want to be where you want me. I want to be where I should be, because I know this deep within my soul, no greater place for me to be but in that place of your will. I want to be dead center in the will of God. Oh, and how beautiful that is. And I believe for the majority of us, at least the ones that of you guys that I know and have talked to so many times and have heard different conversations and whatever, be a Bible school class or a home fellowship or something, these things are discussed amongst us often. We want to be in God's will. We want to be surrendered. We want to be available for the Lord. Well, that's exactly what we come upon when we look at the life of Philip. Philip, the evangelist, was so incredibly available for the Lord that it convicts me. It shakes me a little bit. It surprises me. When I really get into this text and look at it, I just kind of stand back and go, wow, this guy wasn't messing around. Let's look at Philip. Let's look at his availability, and let's look at the story here in Acts. Let's read it first, verse 26, Acts 8. Now an angel of the Lord spoke to Philip, saying, arise and go towards the south, along the road which goes down from Jerusalem to Gaza. This is desert. So he arose and went. And behold, a man of Ethiopia, a eunuch of great authority under Candace, the queen of Ethiopia, who had charge over all her treasury and had come to Jerusalem to worship, was returning. Sitting in his chariot, he was reading Isaiah the prophet. Then the Spirit said to Philip, go near and overtake this chariot. So Philip ran to him and heard him reading the prophet Isaiah and said, do you understand what you are reading? And he said, how can I understand unless someone guides me? And he asked Philip to come up and sit with him. Then the place in the scriptures which he read was this. He was led as a sheep to the slaughter, and like a lamb silent before its shears, he opened not his mouth. In his humility, his justice was taken away. And who will declare his generation? For his life is taken from the earth. So the eunuch answered Philip and said, I ask you, of whom does the prophet say this? Of himself or of some other man? Then Philip opened his mouth and began at this scripture, preaching Jesus to him. Now as they went down the road, they came to some water, and the eunuch said, see, here is water. What hinders me from being baptized? Then Philip said, if you believe with all your heart, you may. And he answered and said, I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. So he commanded the chariot to stand still, and both Philip and the eunuch went down into the water, and he baptized him. Now when they had come up out of the water, the Spirit of the Lord caught Philip away, so the eunuch saw him no more, and he went on his way rejoicing. But Philip was found at Azotus, and passing through, he preached in all the cities till he came to Caesarea. Awesome story. I mean, that's the kind of, you just go, yeah, that's evangelism. I like that. And you know, there's a statement I've heard so many times. Why has this ever happened to me? I mean, that's what I call easy evangelism. You just happen to be running beside a chariot one day, and you hear a guy reading from the prophet Isaiah. It happens to be Isaiah 53. You yell over to him, hey, do you know what you're reading? And he says, no, why don't you come and tell me? And you come up there and preach the gospel to him. Well, now that's the kind of evangelism I like. And when that happens, when those doors open, then I'll, you know, walk through them. But until that happens, well, you know, I'm not going to say anything. And that's the kind of attitude a lot of people have. And they read a story like this and go, come on, it's too easy, too good to be true. But we don't see the background. We don't see the availability of a man named Philip to get him to the place of wide open doors to preach the gospel. See, we go on in our life thinking, if it crosses my path, I'll do it. Philip realized, I must cross its path. I must cross the open door's path. There was four things that I think marked Philip in the issue of surrender, in the issue of availability here. And that is, he had, when I speak of availability, we speak of being ready. We talked about that we were ready for every good work, useful for the master. The master's hand could come down and move me, usable. He says, oh, that's the piece I need. Ready for every good work. When we think of availability, we think of being ready. There was four areas that he was available in, or can we say ready? Number one, he had a ready ear to hear. A ready ear to hear. His ears were ready to hear the voice of God. Philip had a ready ear to hear. Number two, he had a ready heart to obey. Philip had a ready heart to obey. Number three, he had a ready mind to explain the scriptures. A ready mind to explain the scriptures. And number four, he had a ready mouth to preach Jesus. I love that. He had a ready mouth to preach Jesus. So his ears, his heart, his mind, and his mouth were available to the Lord. Now you have those. You have ears. You have a mind. You have a heart. You have a mouth. Are they available? Are they available to the Lord? And we're going to see this, and I'll highlight it as we go through the story, as we begin to develop what's happening here. Let's pick it up in verse 26. Now an angel of the Lord spoke to Philip, saying, arise and go towards the south along the road which goes down from Jerusalem to Gaza. This is desert. We see here in verse 26, we'll see it again in verse 29, that he had a ready ear to hear. The Spirit, the angel of the Lord speaks to him and he says, arise and go towards the south along the road from Jerusalem that goes to Gaza. This is desert. Now, let's set the setting for a minute. Where is Philip again? Does anybody remember? Come on, I'm looking for an answer. Where? Samaria. What's he doing in Samaria? He's preaching the gospel. Revival. Well, now we're talking. God's moving, right? So much so that what happened? The apostles came down and did what? They saw that the Samaritans had received the word of God. They laid hands on them. The Holy Spirit fell. We're talking about a sealing work of God. Not just did Philip go there, not just did he preach, but he did miracles. He did wonders so much Simon the sorcerer gave up his ministry and began to follow Philip. Wow! Samaritans believed. Men and women were baptized in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. The apostles came down and said, this is the Lord. They laid their hands on it. The church was filled with Spirit. Revival was breaking forth. The apostles go home. Philip sitting there going, this is glorious. Man, I got the approval of the apostles from Jerusalem. I'm ready to minister. I'm ready to start planting more churches here in Samaria, raising up leadership. Man, he's an evangelist. Understand, he's a church planner. This is where he wants. This is his life. This is his calling. This is where he wants to be. And an angel of the Lord says, arise and go towards the south. Along the road from Jerusalem to Gaza, this is desert. And at that point, if I was Philip, I'd be like, what? What? But you know, Philip didn't do that. Verse 27 says, so he arose and went. Oh, that phrase is heavy. So he arose and went. You see, he had an ear to hear what God was saying. In a ready ear, he could hear. In the midst of revival, in the midst of focus of his ministry and the things that God is doing, the excitement, he could hear something different. He had an ear to hear. And with that ear to hear, he heard. Now, when he heard something, he then had to do something with what he heard. He had to obey. So he had an ear to hear, but Now he needed a heart to obey, and he had that. He was already ready. It's not, you don't get ready at that time. We want to be used by God, but we don't want to take the time to let God prepare us to use us. And he prepares us with the small things in life, and we think they're small so they don't matter, but they matter more than we know. And we're not ready to obey in the little thing. We're not going to be ready to obey in the big thing. No, you've got to understand what God really says, or what this angel says, the messenger, the word angel means a messenger from God, really says to Philip. Verse 26, he says, "Arise, go towards the south." Okay, Philip is in the region of Samaria, which is above Jerusalem. And if you know your map at all, and you, usually you can kind of mark the nation of Israel by the two bodies of water and the river. And that would be the northern part of Israel is the Sea of Galilee. And then the Jordan River flows from that. And then there's the Dead Sea. Between the Sea of Galilee and the Jordan River by the Dead Sea is the area, really, of Samaria. It's off towards the west, but it's the area of Samaria. And now you've got to understand that Samaria then is above Jerusalem, because Jerusalem is parallel with the Dead Sea. So here's Jerusalem, and here's Samaria. Well, Gaza is towards the south, but it's also towards the west. It's on the shore of the Mediterranean Sea. It's the south there, down by Egypt. And so you've got Samaria, and then you've got Jerusalem, and then you would have to go down here towards the regions of the desert. If you've ever been to Israel, you know that that part of the country of Israel is complete desert. It is not a fun place to be. I've been sitting on the shores of the Sea of Galilee. It's been over 100 degrees. But in that desert, it could get up to 129 degrees in any given summer. It's a hot, hot, hot place. Now, he's above Jerusalem. He's up towards the northern part of the country there in Samaria. God says, go towards the south. Now, interesting, there are two roads to Samaria. Really, two Gaza. There's really two Gazas. There's the old Gaza and the new Gaza in Philip's day. The old Gaza, it was a destroyed city. They built one some miles away that was the new Gaza. Now, you could take one road that would get you to both of the Gazas. But that road would go through more towards the sea as you would make your way there. It'd get cooler. It was towards more farmland and villages. And then you'd come down on the shores of the Mediterranean and go down to Gaza. The other one cut through the desert. The first one, the one that went towards the shore, it was much more traveled. There were cities there. The desert road, not many people traveled. It was pretty dangerous to travel and very hot. But the story even gets deeper. As you look at the word south, he says, go towards the south. The word south here in the Greek is a word that could be translated noonday. Now, when you're in Samaria, the noonday, the sun points towards the south from the location you are in Samaria in Israel. And that's where this word comes from. They would say south, or they would say noonday. This was the way they used the word. In fact, the word's only used twice in the Greek New Testament, both times used in the book of Acts. The other time it's used in Acts chapter 22, verse 6, where Paul the Apostle says he was approaching Damascus and it was noonday. It's the same Greek word as our word south here, which brings up an interesting point. What is the angel speaking to Philip? The angel is speaking to Philip. Philip, I want you to go towards the south. No, he's saying, Philip, I want you to go at noonday, he possibly could be saying. At noonday. Understand this about the ancient world. Nobody traveled at noon. And we'll see this next week, too, when we look at Paul, why he was traveling at noon. It spoke of something that was going on, some urgency. It'd be very rare that you'd travel at noon. So, now you think about, here's Philip. I mean, he's in the midst of revival. He's in a nice land. Samaria's a great place. And God says, go towards the desert. Go along the desert highway, not the coastal highway, the desert highway where nobody travels, and do it at noonday. And this is what Philip says. It says, and he arose and went. And that blows me away. He didn't say, God, whoa, I need confirmation. Maybe two angels, maybe three. It's got to be, whoa, is this really the Lord? But see, he had an ear to hear. He knew when it was the Lord and when it wasn't. And there are times in our lives, I know in my walk, there's been times where God has spoken things to me that I don't fully understand, but I know it's the Lord. I can't deny it. I know the voice of God because I have tuned my ears into hearing the Lord. And I've heard from him. And it's not outside of the context of Scripture. It's not an unbiblical thing. The Lord has spoken. And I must obey the Lord. But you know what that's going to take? We talk about having a ready ear to hear and a ready heart to obey. But what's that going to take? It's going to take faith. It's going to take, and somebody that is available for the Lord is somebody that has faith. Somebody that really, really trusts in the Lord. Now, when I say trust in the Lord, what am I talking about? I'm talking about the character of God. God will ask me to do something, and as I look at it from a human point of view, I've got a revival going here. God, this is my calling. You spoke to me to go to Samaria. I went. I did the work, and you're moving. Now you're seemingly speaking to me to go to the desert in the noontime to Gaza. It's a destroyed city. What am I going to do there? Lord, I'm an evangelist. I go where there's people. But Philip didn't do that because Philip realized that God is sovereign and that God's got something in store that he doesn't know about. And here's where we begin to realize the idea of stepping out in faith. In a biblical context, how do you step out in faith? You've got to realize something about faith. Faith is things that are unseen. Faith is understanding that God is speaking to you about something, but maybe he doesn't tell you the whole thing. Notice God doesn't tell Philip, Philip, go down the road towards Gaza. Go in the noon. Because Philip, there's an Ethiopian, he'll be in a chariot. Run up to him. When Philip gets there, when he sees a chariot, he still doesn't know why he's there. It's not until verse 29 says, and the Spirit said to him, overtake the chariot. And he overtook it. It's at that point. See, there's step one. And until you take step one, you're not going to get step two. And that's how God works many times. You can look all through the Scriptures, and the stories are abounding. I think about Abraham. God says, go, leave your country. Where am I going? Go. I'll show you when you get there. When am I going to get there? Keep going. I'll tell you when you get there. That's kind of difficult, Lord. Are you serious here? Are you trying to tell me just to go? Where am I going? What am I going to tell my family? What am I going to tell my friends? I'm going. Where? I don't know. That doesn't sound too responsible, Lord. What am I going to tell the church here in Samaria? I'm going to Gaza. Old Gaza, going through the desert, going to noonday. Why? I don't know. I just know the Lord spoke. Got to do it. Got to go. Well, what about the church here? What about? It doesn't make any sense. But if you know it's the Lord, you've got to take that step. And when you do, it's then the next step is revealed. And then as the story goes on, the next step is revealed. Now he's in the chariot, and he's preaching the gospel. What's the next step? Well, God brings water. The guy says, baptize me. Oh, okay. Next step, baptize him. We're going to find that in verse 40, he what's his next step? Well, what do you do now? The chariot now goes off. I'm stuck in the desert. Should I go back to Samaria? God leads him to go through the villages all the way up the coast of Israel to Caesarea. And there we find in the book of Acts, in Acts chapter 21, verse 8, that he makes his home there. That he has four daughters there. Being led by the Spirit of God is difficult. It's not easy. People think, well, just to be led, how fun. Oh, it's fun when it's all said and done and you can write a story about it. It's like, yeah, and God did this and here's the miracle and here's what he did. But when you're right there, You're like, what am I going to do? We saw Paul go through this, and we're going to see it in the book of Acts. And again, the stories go on and on and on throughout the scriptures. The evidence is overwhelming. You want to know what the four steps are, and then you'll take step one. And God says, I'm not telling you even step two until you take step one. And we sit here like this. I don't know. Well, I don't understand. You know, I'm just going to wait for confirmation. I'm going to wait for the Lord really to, you know, God's confirmed he told you to take step one. That's all you need. Well, what about, you know, in 2 years? Deal with it in 2 years. God will show you. If he's leading you now, he's not going to stop. And the sweet thing about Philip is that not only did he have an ear to hear in verse 26, but he had it again in verse 29. He was continually listening. He was ready. And that's how we need to live our life. Now, we face a problem here in a practical sense. When you're walking with the Lord, when you're seeking the Lord, and God's leading you, whether it's moving to another place, another city, another state, whether it's getting a new job, whether it's, you know, whatever it is, and on we can go. How do I know the Lord's leading me? Here's a question that comes up. It's a good question. But God spoke to me to, let's say it's moving. God spoke to me to move here. And people say, well, do you think God changed his mind? Like, is God, you know, got a problem with not knowing what he wants? And many times people, God speaks. And me, God spoke so clear, absolutely no doubt about it. It was the Lord. And because it was so strong, it's so hard to move on. Because you feel like, but God spoke to me to do this. We must realize that God isn't bound to one thing for your life. God has spoken at a time in your life as clear as day. You obeyed him, you followed him, you were blessed in doing that. I hope you still have an ear to hear. Because he might speak something else. And many times we don't hear it because we're done. God spoke. It's over. We're done. We're settled in. Some people are so settled in, they have cement around their feet. And God's got to get a jackhammer out to uproot them. And it hurts. It's a difficult thing. You get shaken, if you know what I mean. Radically. Your foundation is cracked. Because God's got to move you, but to move you, he's got to break the foundation, get jackhammer, shake it. Listen, there's a balance, because then on the other side, so there's those that would cement themselves in. There's others that just kind of float. And, you know, one day God said this, the next day this, and you just, but you never really see any fruit out of these things God's speaking to them. And that's the extreme of, oh, well, you know, it's getting too hard. In this thing I'm doing, must not be the Lord. And you get an idea in your mind, what about if I did this? Oh, Lord spoke. We need to be very careful of saying when God spoke and when God didn't speak. Because there's many times that I want to say, I'm done with this ministry, or I'm done with this thing that I feel like the Lord once led me in, because it's too hard now. And I just don't like it anymore. We call it being burned out. You've got to be careful not to be burned out in a situation, not to get burned out about something and cause you to, in the name of what Philip did here, well, the Lord's changing the direction. And really the issue is you're flaking out. You don't have endurance. The New Testament is filled with verse after verse after verse on endurance. Well, a good example of this is in Acts chapter 13, verse 13. It says, and John Mark departed for Jerusalem. That sounds all great there. And you can see it, you know, I can look and say, well, the Lord led John Mark to go to Jerusalem. Good, there's nothing wrong with that, right? Not until I read Acts chapter 15 there at the end, and Barnabas wants to take John Mark again on another missionary journey, and that's where they were in Acts 13 on the mission field. And Paul says, no way. I'm not going to take him who departed from us in the middle of the work. He did not finish the work with us. Obviously, it brought injury and harm to the ministry of Paul. So much so that Paul was willing to separate from Barnabas over the issue. He was so determined he's not taking John Mark. John Mark flaked out. John Mark couldn't hang, and he went home to mommy in Jerusalem. We know his mom had a nice house in Jerusalem. John Mark bailed out. He went home to the comforts. Maybe he didn't count the cost. But that's a situation that you could say, okay, hold on. Not every time somebody says, oh, Lord, just lead me somewhere else. And people do that. All of a sudden, one day, they're focused, they're going in a direction, they're moving in, let's say, a ministry, and, you know, they've got all these responsibilities, and one day they just say, the Lord's led me elsewhere, boom, and they drop everything and leave them with you. As a senior pastor, I understand these things. It happens all the time. Somebody's got vision, and they want to start something. You let them start something. You encourage it. You announce it. And you build the ministry, and then all of a sudden, they're out of there. Why? Because they got ripped off by the enemy. Because they got discouraged. You see, the situation with Philip isn't an issue, and here's where it comes down to discerning between my flesh, discouragement, and the voice of God. The issue isn't, he wasn't burned out about Samaria. He didn't have issues. He didn't have problems. Anytime you've got issues and problems, and then you think you've heard God say, move on, you've got to be careful. And you really need to pray about it. But when you're going on in something, you're blessed, you're excited, and all of a sudden, like out of the blue, there's a turn in your heart. And you feel like God's saying, go there. Let this go. Lord, what are you? And it's all, you don't want to let it go. It's hard for you to let it go. You're like, this is awesome. What do you mean? That takes faith. To let go of something that you can see tangibly and visibly before you and to place it down. And say, Lord, bless it. You know, this morning, Pastor Donnie gave his farewell message to his church. And they're leaving tomorrow. Real difficult. Real emotional morning, I can guarantee it. Can you imagine if this morning was my last message and I was leaving? It'd be a very emotional morning for us. See you guys. God bless you. Maybe I'll see you in a couple years. Real difficult. Here he's got a blessed, flourishing ministry. In times of discouragement, he's stuck in there. Now it's times of blessing. God doing things, people getting saved, the church is growing. It's wonderful. And in those times, that takes faith. Now I was just in Kampala, Africa with Pastor Donnie, where he's going to plant a church. And you know, that takes faith to leave that ministry to no ministry. To start all over again. And I looked around the city and I said, good luck, buddy. I'm going home to my church. I mean, that's what it is. It's in that time of blessing the Lord will speak. And listen, we've got to be willing. I continually check my heart. To be willing to be in that place. Of if God would call me out, or if God would do something, you know, not set my feet in cement saying, this is it, this is where I am. But, you know, that's my heart. That's why I believe the Lord's led me. This is where I am. God's called me to equip saints. God's called me to raise people up. So I'll stay right here. But you know what? If I'm going to be available, I better be available. Available for God to turn that direction, to shift gears if need be. Brothers and sisters, we need to have those hearts of complete availability and being led by the Spirit of God and being directed at the same time, not using it as an excuse to get out of something I don't like. A lot of times we just lose passion, we lose vision, we're distracted with other things. And the reality is we just need to get focused and get our eyes back on the Lord and continue to do what we're doing. But at the same time, leaving that room open for the Lord to lead us. And so we can see all of these things here in Philip's life. Verse 27, we must move. So he arose and he went. And behold, a man of Ethiopia, a eunuch of great authority under Candace, the queen of the Ethiopians, who had charge of all her treasury, and he came to Jerusalem to worship. First of all, let's talk for a minute about where Ethiopia is. Ethiopia of today isn't the Ethiopia of the Bible. Ethiopia of the Bible is where Sudan is today. And that's interesting, and I think brings some context even to our ministries. It's interesting, one of the regions of Ethiopia, from my studies, was a place called Numa, which we know today as the Numa Mountains. It's one of the most hot parts of war and battle in Sudan, and it's one of the most needed places for the gospel, one of the most unreached places in Sudan. You couldn't drive a car there. You can fly into a certain point, and then you've got a hike. Most people don't make the hike unless they're in really, really fit shape. It's a good day hike, straight up mountain cliffs. Listen, what we've got to understand is where this man lived was Sudan. I love that. Now, from Homer on, the Ethiopians were known as the edge of the world. That's what, in the first century, that was in the mind. A man from Ethiopia, this was what they said, the edge of the world. You fall off the world once you get to that point. In fact, Homer said of those in Ethiopia, this is what they said, quote, the last of men. He called the Ethiopians the last of men in reference to, in the context of the edge of the world. They're the last of men. They're past them, there's no other human beings. So think about this for Philip the evangelist. He's going to reach a guy who in his mind is the end of the world, the last of men, the unreached. Jesus said, go into all the world, preach the gospel. And he said that you'll be witnesses of me in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. Ethiopia is the ends of the earth to them. This is radical. So Philip leaves this revival in local Samaria to take it to the edge of the earth. But he doesn't know that. He doesn't know that until he gets there, until he sees it. And the beautiful thing, he didn't even have to travel all the way there. Now, this man, it says he came to Jerusalem to worship. He is probably one that we would consider a proselyte. There are God-fearers and there are proselytes. We'll talk more about God-fearers in Acts chapter 10. He is definitely an Ethiopian. He is of his ethnic background from Africa. And so here's a man who's a different color skin. He's there and the gospel's going to be carried. Now he's a man of great authority. Notice that. That's going to become important because he's going to preach what he believes. And he's got great authority to do it. So he's going to take this. He's a proselyte. He's converted to Judaism. We know that because he's got a scroll. Even a God-fearer probably wouldn't have a scroll in hand. He's got a scroll. He's reading it. He's concerned. He comes to Jerusalem. That's a long trip. Think about the trip this guy made to Jerusalem. That's devotion. That's dedication. And I don't know if you realize how long that would take. It would take months of traveling. You imagine just get in a chariot and go to New York. You know, I mean, we're talking about a long, long trip. We're talking about through some hot, hot terrain. When I think of the southern tip of Israel, of Egypt, and Sudan, it's just desert. That's all it is desert. It's a horrible place. Never want to live there. And this guy travels all the way to Jerusalem to worship the Lord, to just give tithes. When we say worship the Lord, that's what he's going to do. He's going to give a sacrifice. He's going to come home. He probably came out at one of the feast times, showing his devotion and dedication, which brings up another interesting point. In the book of Acts, we've seen this development of the gospel going from Jews, remember this, to, and not just Jews to Gentiles, Jews to Hellenists, Acts 6, Greek-speaking Jews. It goes from Jews to Hellenists. Then we saw it to Samaritans, half-Jews. Now we're seeing it going to a proselyte. Interesting. Acts chapter 10, we're going to see it going to a God-fearer and to the Gentiles. It's incredible. Luke is just developing God's plan of redemption. It's like, guys, I don't know if you realize this, but the entire Bible is climaxing at this point in the book of Acts. God's plan from Genesis chapter 12, verse 3, is now just unfolding before our eyes. Thousands and thousands of years of people wondering of what these things meant, wondering what this prophecy in Isaiah meant, are just unfolding. And that's exactly Luke's purpose when he writes. He is showing us. He's taking pen in hand saying, I'm going to show God's plan. Again, I believe that Luke writes as a defense before Paul, before the Roman government. In the Roman government, your religion, if there's a new religion, it would have to be legalized by Rome amongst the Roman Empire. What Luke is doing is saying, listen, this isn't a new religion. This is Judaism's fulfillment. This is the Messiah of Israel. And through the Gospel of Luke and the book of Acts, he does that. And he's showing the development from the roots of Jesus' birth, the prophecies given at Jesus' birth. And he's just unfolding God's plan of redemption. And he's showing this is the fulfillment of Judaism. It's not a new religion, and it's not unlawful. And he takes us through the book of Acts doing that. And man, how God is such a master at using basic, practical circumstances to get men to write his word, to bring forth theology and understanding and insight and revelation. And so what we have is just another piece, another step, moving a little farther, a little broader out, now to proselytes from Africa, receiving the word of God. He was returning to Jerusalem, verse 28, sitting in his chariot. He was reading Isaiah the prophet. Note, I want you to note that Isaiah the prophet would be a scroll. There's no chapters. There's no verses. He's just reading through it. He just happens to be reading it. When they would read in biblical times, they'd read out loud. So here's this guy. I want to paint the picture, if I can, for us. Here's a guy. He's going down a desert road. He's in a chariot. Understand this. He's a man of great authority, and he came with a lot of money. He's got a big army around him. He's got armed men around him. He's got a chariot. He's sitting there as a king, almost, in his chariot. Okay? Philip, it says in verse 29, then the Spirit said to Philip, go near and overtake this chariot. If you recognize anything here, understand anything about what I'm talking about, here's a chariot. It's going through the desert. He's armed men around him. You would assume horseback men armed with you know, swords and whatnot. And this is whole entourage going through the desert. Here's the king, if you would, this man in the middle of this chariot. And God says to Philip, go near. What? I'll die. See, you got to understand this. It's not just like, hey, how you doing? How's things going? Go near. That phrase, go near, just that's faith to just say, okay, I'll go near. I'm not going near that thing, is what I'd say. And he says, go near and overtake the chariot. Now, Lord, how am I going to do that? Now, notice what it says. Notice what the text says here. So Philip ran, two of them. Wait. Philip, where's your horse? Where's your men? Philip, there he is. You can just see the guy sitting there. Here's this guy running through the desert. You know, they're walking on their horse. This guy's running. Hey! You understand what you're reading? Philip runs to him. I mean, guys, think about what's going on here. And he hears him reading the prophet Isaiah. And again, when God tells Philip to run to him, does Philip know what he's doing? He's got no clue. What's run and overtake the chariot mean? Do you want me to beat all the guys? I mean, what's that mean? Run and overtake the chariot. Philip starts running, and as he's running to him, I can just see Philip running next to him, and he hears him reading Isaiah the prophet. And he says to him, do you understand what you are reading? And he said, how can I, unless someone guides me? And he asked Philip to come up and sit with him. Now, I want you to notice something here. The third thing that Philip was ready in availability, is Philip was ready to explain the scriptures. At this point, Philip knew, bam, that's it. I can just see him. He starts running, thinking, oh, God, here we go. Is this going to work? And if this isn't you, I'm a dead man. He runs up. He hears a guy reading Isaiah. Oh, cool. Oh, hey, you know what you're reading? Step of faith. But he's ready to explain what he's reading. See, he's going to back up what he says. He didn't say, do you know what you're reading? The guy says, no, that's what we got to me. Yeah, me too. What really is all that mumbo jumbo written there in Isaiah? See, he was ready. He's ready to explain the scriptures. He'd studied. This is part of being ready for every good work. Are we prepared? Are we a prepared people for God? Does God say, oh, that's the chess piece I need. That's usable. That's available. That will work. That's a ready, spirit-filled. That's somebody who has an ear to hear, a heart to obey, a mind that is studied, and I'm ready to use them. And so then he finds a portion of Isaiah, which is Isaiah 53. There's no better place he could be reading from. Just by coincidence, as he was scrolling through his scroll, he happened to come there. Listen, when God said go at noonday, God knew what he was saying. God had timing. God told him what time to go. And I love that. And don't put those things out of your mind like, oh, that's nothing. What, I'm crazier. Listen. Philip had to run at the exact time to hear those exact words. Think about that. And God is very precise in what he does. Verse 34, so the Ethiopian answered Philip and said, I ask of you, of whom does the prophet say this? Of himself or of some other man? Now, that's an inspired question. I mean, now at this point, I'm saying, now that's easy, Philip. Those are wide open. That's an open door. But remember what it took Philip to get to this open door. And it says, then Philip opened his mouth and beginning at this scripture, preached Jesus to him. Church, Philip was ready, had a ready ear to hear, had a ready heart to obey. He had a ready mind to explain the scriptures, and he had a ready mouth. He had a ready mouth to preach Jesus, which takes boldness. Now it's time to go. Maybe this guy won't like what you say. Maybe he's a staunch, you know, Jew. As a proselyte, they would be called a Jew. He's a staunch Jew. What are you saying? I heard that message in Jerusalem when I was there. Rabbis don't agree with that. Sanhedrin rejects it. They crucified him. Philip's preaching Jesus. He's not just preaching some interpretation on Isaiah. He's preaching Jesus to him from this text and going on from it. He began there and he preached Jesus. Church, are we ready to preach Jesus? The door's open, we're preaching Jesus. And are we getting to the door by walking in faith, taking those steps of faith and allowing God to work and use us? I just love the boldness, the obedience, the faith that it took Philip to get to the desert in the middle of the day on foot, running next to a chariot of a man of great authority and God putting him in the seat next to the guy. And Philip preached the gospel to him. Clearly. How do I know? And I'm going to say something about the gospel here. Verse 36. Now as they went down the road, they came to some water. And the Ethiopian said, or the eunuch said, see, here is water. What hinders me from being baptized? I want you to notice what's being said here. What hinders me from being baptized? As he sees water. Where would he get the idea of baptism? Philip preached it to him. When Philip preached Jesus to him, and here's something that I want to mark out once again in the book of Acts. The early church preached what Jesus taught him to preach. And that is believe and be baptized. Jesus taught him to do that. Mark chapter 16, verse 15. Those who believe and are baptized shall be saved. Those who do not believe shall be condemned. And people have shunned away from baptism because others have overemphasized baptism and have now made it a part, a necessity for salvation. And I don't believe baptism is a necessity for salvation, and neither did Paul. And neither did Peter. But they recognized its use, purpose, and place. It was part of their gospel message. When you preach the gospel, do you urge people to get baptized? They did. So much so that they're going down the road, and I'm sure time has passed. I mean, they've dialogued the scriptures. Philip is preaching. This guy is hungry. He's listening. He's just receiving this, and they come across water, and the guy, oh wait, there's water. What hinders me? Let's do this thing. Let's do it right. Let's do it now. I love this. And so he commands the chariot to stop. Oh, let me hit verse 37. Then Philip said, if you believe with all your heart, you may. And he answered and said, I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. Now, if you're reading out of an NIV right now, that verse isn't there. It's just missing. Disappeared. If you're reading out of a New American Standard, it's in brackets. If you're reading out of the King James, it's there. If you're reading out of the New King James like I am, you'll have a footnote. And it talks about the manuscripts. Most of the manuscripts don't have this verse in it. Now, it is very, very likely that the original text of Acts did not have verse 37 in it. If you do your manuscript studying properly, it's 80% chance it wasn't there. I don't know one scholar today that would say it was there. If you do, tell me about it. I don't personally know. Again, I'm not a scholar. I'm not a textual critic. I can't even read Greek. So I'm not about to give my judgment on it. But it's probably not there. But let me say this. It was, and then how did it get there, you might say? Well, I'll tell you how it got there. It got there, if it wasn't there in the original, it got there by a scribe, as they would copy down the manuscripts. He added it for clarity. Why? Why would he add it for clarity? And it begins to appear in the second century. And why would he add it for clarity? He'd add it for clarity because that was the theology of the church at that time. And so what he probably did is said, you know what, this would fit this story great and kind of back up, our theology. Okay, and so it, sometimes it'd start in a margin. He would add it like a comment, like a commentary. Like you have in your Bible, you have notes at the bottom. They'd add a note in the margin. And then the next scribe, when he would translate it or when he would transcribe it, he'd copy it down. He maybe added it in. So, yeah, that kind of goes in. And you got to understand all the texts, they weren't just these, column, beautiful little text. I mean, they're kind of jumbled, and sometimes these things get jumbled, and after copy after copy after copy, these things enter in. But what is important, I think, for us to see here and understand is if this wasn't in the original, number one, theologically, it is beautiful according to the New Testament. Absolutely a beautiful phrase. And number two, this was the belief of the early church by the second century. And that's interesting. That's kind of a footnote for us. That in the second century, the early church, this is what they held to about baptism. Now, there is one small argument. If it was there, if it was in the original, it would seem interesting because Philip just left Samaria where he had Simon, who was falsely baptized in the name of the Lord, and really probably wasn't converted. We looked at that last week. If that's so, in Philip's mind, he could be saying, ho, 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 I'm not baptizing anybody unless I know they're really converted. And so he makes this statement to him. Regardless of what the textual critics say or what the truth of the matter is, it's a very biblical phrase, and it's beautiful. Let me read it again. Then Philip said, if you believe with all your heart, I love that, and I use this when I preach the gospel. When I baptize somebody, do you believe with all your heart? And he answered and said, I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. That phrase right there, was an early church creed. I believe that Jesus Christ, the Son of God, at baptism. That was a confession those being baptized made. I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. So he commanded the chariot to stand still, and both Philip and the eunuch went down into the water, and he was baptized. Now when they had come out of the water, the Spirit of the Lord caught Philip away, so that the eunuch saw him no more, and he went on his way rejoicing. The eunuch goes on his way rejoicing, Philip disappears. I mean, that's kind of like almost a sign to this Ethiopian eunuch. Oh, like this guy's a messenger from God. The word is rapture. He's caught away. Taken up. Out of here. Can you imagine there? You just get baptized by this guy and baptize you. The gospel's. And you notice it's when it's all done. And baptism's the seal. If it's done, guy's gone. I just see the eunuch looking around going, he rejoices. And he just goes on his way. To carry the gospel back to the region of Sudan of our day. Verse 40, but Philip was found at Azotus, the next city up. Now, this is God's grace. Philip's out there in the desert. Philip is working hard. Philip's had a long trip. I mean, running, you know, along the chariot, trying to keep up with it in that sand. I mean, his feet were probably burning. And God just said, I'm going to give you a free ride. First class like you've never seen. And I'm going to take you to a nice city on the coast of Israel and just place you there. I love it. I love it. And it says that he passed through. He preached in all the cities till he came to Caesarea. Notice what Philip did. And that little verse right there. Couple that with verse 25. Where the apostles did the same thing in Samaria. And it's got so much for us for the itinerant ministry of an evangelist, of a missionary. What did he do? He passed through the cities and he preached the gospel. And he preached the gospel. And as he worked his way up, he preached the gospel. Could have taken months, could have taken a year for him to get up to Caesarea. And God was moving and working. Church, I just want to challenge us with this. I want to leave us with this. Are you surrendered? Are you in a place of availability for the Lord? Are you in a place where God is able to use you and God is able to direct you and lead you in any way He wants? Or do you have your limits? Do you tell God, God, I'll go this far, but here's the line, I'm drawing it right now. Because I'll tell you what, if you do that, what you're doing is you're quenching the Spirit of God in your life and it's going to hurt you. There's no greater joy, no greater blessing to be in the dead center of the will of God. At the same time, it's sometimes the hardest thing to ever do. But I'll tell you what, brothers and sisters, being in that place many times myself, seeing others that aren't in that place, and seeing others that are in that place, I'll tell you what, if I was just to sit back and look, seeing others that just are not willing to surrender certain things, others that have given it up, when I look at those two groups of people, boy, I sure would want to be with them. The ones that have surrendered are just blessed. I mean, just spending time with them, they're just blessed. They're filled with the Spirit. They have not a care in life. They trust God. They walk with them. And they've got exciting stories to share with you. They're the kind of people you want to be around. The kind of people that get you all stirred up for the Lord. People of faith, and they don't just talk. I mean, they've done it. They're there. They're doing it. They're loving it. They're living it. And they're just blessed. The other group of people are bitter. Usually they backslide because they're in rebellion against God in areas of their life, and they're struggling, and they're depressed, and you don't walk away from them stirred up for the Lord. You walk away from them trying to stir them up for the Lord. And I just plead with us that we would be a people that would be surrendered to the Lord. God's will for your life is the best thing that you could ever have because God loves you. And this is where it comes into trusting in the character of God. Philip said, I don't know why God would say, go to the desert in the noontime, to do what? I don't know. Leave a revival? Why? But he understood that God knows more than he does, and it's going to be good. When the chapter closes, it's going to be a great, great story. When it opens, it's like, what? God speaks to Abraham, one of the greatest surrenders in all of the Bible. And he says to Abraham, take your son, your only son, up to a mount which I will show you, to sacrifice him there. The evidence of the surrender in Abraham is amazing. Abraham, it says that Abraham rose early in the morning and went. That phrase just stops me in my tracks. I'd have waited until night. I mean, I would have been wrestling with God for days. Before the sun came up, Abraham was up to do one thing, obey God. Against all reason, against all emotions, against everything within him, because he knew this. He knew the character of God. And he knew that God had promised through this son is going to be a nation, and all the peoples of the earth shall be blessed. And the book of Hebrews tells us that Abraham knew this, that if he was to fulfill that and kill his son, God would raise him from the dead, because God gave a promise. That's faith. Faith based on the character of God. He says, God has given a promise, and God is faithful to his promises. And God's telling me right now to go sacrifice my son. I'm going to do it. But God's going to work this out some way, somehow. God's got it all planned. God's got this together. God knows what he's doing. And I'm going to surrender myself to the Lord right now. Whew, that's obedience. But you know what? Abraham was a blessed man, wasn't he? He wasn't miserable. He didn't regret doing that. He goes into the hall of faith in Hebrews chapter 11 as the man of faith with that very issue. And it gives us the insight to say, in his mind, he trusted God so much, he knew somehow God's going to work this up. If need be, God's going to raise him from the dead. And I'm going to sit here and watch it, and it's going to be a glorious experience. Any of you that are parents understand how difficult that would be, emotionally. Take up your son, your only son, and sacrifice him. Forget about that. That's the devil. That's not the Lord. And if any of you get an idea like that, it is the devil. Don't worry. It was only for Abraham. But the evidence of surrender is incredible. And God might just call you to do something to test you. And it says that God tested Abraham. Why? So God could see how Abraham was? God didn't test Abraham so God could say, oh, I hoped you'd make it, Abe. God tested Abraham because God knew Abraham needed to see where he was before the Lord. When you're tested, it's not God finding out new information about your heart. It's you finding out where you are. And we'll be amazed through some testings that we find out we're not where we think we are. We think we're ready. We think we're available. We think we're surrendered. We think we'll do it. We think we'll go and do whatever God's called us to do. We'll make sacrifices, and we talk about them like they're not a problem. In reality, when it comes down to it, it's a huge problem. And God will continually, graciously, lovingly deal with us. If God has taken you through a test, I would encourage you to submit to him. If you don't, you're simply going to hurt yourself. You're going to be miserable. You've got to learn to trust the Lord. Give it all to him and just allow him to love you. That's what he wants to do. His way of love is different than yours. It might not feel good all the time. But once you surrender, boy, that peace that comes where I'm no longer at war with the Lord. That peace that comes of, you know what, I'm just going to walk with God and love him and enjoy him. And that's what he wants of us. All the great men in the Bible, the Paul the Apostles, the Peters, the Johns, the James, all of these men were men that just walked in simplicity. They just loved Jesus. They just loved the Lord and walked with him and enjoyed him. I see so many people so struggling about walking with the Lord. It's because we put it on ourselves and we fight. And we put our boundaries down and we give. And instead, we just surrender. Just give it up. Just let it go. Just obey Him and trust Him and worship Him. And when you don't feel like it, worship Him some more. Because it's what you need. It's not what He needs. He doesn't need, give me more worship. I need more worship. You need it. Your soul needs to just pour it out before Him. You need it so bad. Anxiety is controlling you. You need the peace of God, and you need to give thanksgiving right now. And you need to declare to God how much you thank Him for everything He's done in your life. Though you think something horrible is happening to you, you just begin to worship. That's surrender. And that's the place of blessing. And that's the place of hearing the Lord. And that's the place of the Spirit-filled life. And I pray that we grab that. Because so many Christians today are missing out on the fullness of the abundant life. And Jesus said, I've come to give you life and that life more abundantly. His will isn't death more abundantly. His will is life, blessing, spiritual blessings, fellowship with Him, incredible stories of glory. And if your life turned into the life like Stephen's did, you don't read Stephen's life and go, whoa, that's horrible. You read about his life and go, wow. That's incredible. And is he blessed today? Church, let me ask you this. What do you got to lose? What do you got to lose? Nothing. You've got everything to gain. Everything. The only thing you have to lose is your flesh. Your misery that your flesh brings. Your apathy. You've got everything to gain. Don't neglect so great a salvation. It's too good to pass up.